Welcome, y'all, to the Direct Examination Podcast. I'm Dane Phillips.
And I'm Joseph Bias. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for all the wonderful feedback on our 100th episode and our episode last week. Dane, how are you?
I'm just living the dream as usual out here in the streets, being a man of the people. How are you?
You know what? I'm doing okay. We moved this week. We both survived it, so that was a win. I am no longer a urban city guy. I am now an old suburban man. So I feel more pride about cutting grass now, which is nice. I have thoughts about school districts. Like, these are all things. Yeah.
The white new balance.
I plan on sitting out in my front porch and just looking at the young people playing grass in the street.
That's right.
Saying, So,
stay off my lawn.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. It's going to be great. I'm so looking forward to all of this. So if you're listening to this show, obviously you figured out how to get to the show. But if you are listening, there's something that you can do for us. And we ask very little of you. We don't, you know, this is a free podcast. We don't ask you to send us money, although if you want to send us money, well, you can send us money. But what we do ask, because Dane, Amber, and I are very vain people, and we live off of your approval. So here's what we want you to do. If you're on Apple right now, go to your podcast feed, and where you see those stars, give us a 5-star rating. And now, for some of you Spotify listeners, you can do the same thing. So if you go on your Spotify app, you can rate us 5 stars. You can give us a review. You can say nice things. You can say mean things. But give us a 5 stars and we'll listen to everything after that.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you do after the 5 stars. You can say after whatever the 5 stars you want.
And that way we can tell folks that not only are we the elitist of the legal elite podcast, but also we're a 5-star podcast.
We can't say we're the only anymore. Although we're the true OGs of legal podcasts of South Carolina, but we're not the only anymore.
We're not the only, but dare I say we're the best. And I say that with love for all of our fellow attorneys. But one thing we have, Dane, that other folks don't have, as you know, is that we have nothing but illustrious guests on this particular show. And so for today, you know, every week we try to beat ourselves. And this week, I think we did. So we have 2 illustrious guests this week. We have Yolanda Curry of Curry Mediation. Now, she's certified and she mediates in state and federal courts across South Carolina. She's a former statewide litigator, but now she focuses on mediation and all types of civil cases for the last 9 years. She's on the South Carolina Bar's Dispute Resolution Section Council, and she helps organize the Bar's Mediation Week activities, which we're going to talk about today. We also have Kevin Barth with us. Kevin practices law at Barth, Ballinger, and Lewis in Florence. And I believe he's our first Florence guest, so we're happy to have him. Where his practice involves plaintiffs, civil litigation, and mediations of civil cases and family court cases. Kevin's been in practice since 1982. That's slightly before Dane and I have been practicing.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that.
Just slightly.
Just by a year or two.
A year or two. You know, who can even remember at this point? But he has an AV Martindale rating for over 20 years. He's been inducted into the American College of Trial Lawyers. And if you know that organization, that's a huge deal. And an international invitation only organization that recognizes trial lawyers who excel in competence, ethics, and civility. They're here this week to talk about mediation. We're thrilled to have them. Yolanda, Kevin, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Happy to be here.
Yes, thank you for being here. This is a topic that we haven't covered out of 101 episodes, our predecessors. It's such a critical role in civil litigation and family court litigation that for those, I'm a criminal practitioner and I do appellate criminal appeals and some post-conviction work, but I don't play in the sandbox of civil litigation and family court. And so, I definitely would love to hear different things that possibly I've never heard about. And I know how critical it is because of how much things have changed over the years with mediation. So I guess maybe that's the good segue of from the beginning of your careers till now, where have you seen that shift, you know, kind of on the spectrum of how has mediation progressed over the years?
One thing's for sure is when Yolanda and I were young lawyers, we could try cases almost every term of court, civil court, whatever it was. There were always plenty of cases to try. Once people got used to the concept of mediation, now you'll look around the state and in a week-long docket will have two or three cases on it because all the rest have been resolved through mediation. And that's the biggest way. You know, that's the biggest change that I've certainly seen in 39 years.
In the beginning of mediation for me, I think I was certified in 2001. At that point in time, I think maybe one or two, they had just begun the process of requiring mediation in the state courts. And I don't know how many years ago it was, but all 46 counties are now required to mediate. Doesn't mean you have to settle the case or that you have to do anything with it, but that's probably been the biggest thing for me is that cases now are required to mediate, which brings more cases to a settlement. And you don't have the overload on the docket, you know, that you
do. I don't want to cut you off. I apologize.
And that's
My question was, so both of you have kind of been around for, you know, the before times where things were going to a trial and now where obviously mediation is a, you know, is a priority for the bar. I'm curious if you think that the skill of trial work has taken a hit because of the proliferation of mediations.
I may be in the minority. I don't know because I've never really asked. But mediation, in my mind, makes lawyers prepare their case for trial earlier and more thoroughly than if you were just called on Friday and say you're first up on Monday to come try your case. When you schedule a mediation, you have to sit down with your client, get your evidence in order, and show up at mediation as if you were going to try it. And if, you know, if you're a good lawyer and you're with a good mediator like Yolanda, she's going to ask me on the points that are not my strong points. And if I'm not ready to go to trial and explain how to deal with that, I've got a problem, and that's what a good mediator will point out. So, I mean, other than talking to juries, I don't think it's really changed the practice very much. I think it's made us a little more prepared a little earlier in the process.
I agree with Kevin, because I'll see, too, sometimes lawyers who are actually preparing for trial during the mediation because it's the first time that they've gone back and read the medical documents. And so it is a help, I think, in getting prepared for trial if it doesn't settle.
Well, I mean, you answered the question I was about to say is, do you think the forced mediation is a good thing? Is it a positive thing? And so you both answered it that, you know, I completely agree that, you know, lawyers procrastinating, that would never happen, right? So waiting to the last minute to prepare, I'm sure that would never. So I definitely see the significance of having the lawyers come together and really see strengths and weaknesses of their case and having a neutral party. Because as we all do, we get a little bit of psychosis and delusion about our own cases and a little tunnel vision. And so I think that's obviously the other part of it. Outside of people not actually trying the cases, I'm with you. I think there's only positives for it.
Well, I tell you,
it's been really positive in this last year and a half because cases weren't getting tried. There was no way to try a case. And so I found more lawyers pushing to mediate cases. Although there was a learning curve, you know, with the virtual mediations, but it's been a positive in that regard.
Well, it's been great. It's been fantastic. And even though we're open back up for trials and stuff, I think lawyers and clients both have taken to the virtual Zoom mediations and really do like it. One advantage, particularly for young lawyers have a tendency not to want to tell their clients bad news, you know, not tell them, hey, we got some problems with this case. We've got this and we've got that. You know, you want to spin it always in the best light. Well, that's not always the best for the client. And sometimes when you sit down at mediation, that's the first time that my client hears the other lawyer tell us the other side of the story. And then the mediator can say, hey, look, now she's got a point. I mean, she's got a point, and the jury may very well believe that. So you need to consider that. And that's, like I said, for some young lawyers that don't want to give them bad news, that's the first time they get hit in the face with reality, and it helps keep cases settled. It really does.
Yeah, when I had someone tell me, you know, before I took this state job, is that mediation is great because not only is it your first opportunity and your client's first opportunity to hear the other side's case, and it's also there for the other side's opportunity, first time to hear your client's, and your client may not like everything they hear on both sides. Like, it's one thing to be in a room with your client and they're pumping their case up. Of course, every client has the best case ever, but it's another thing entirely if you have to sit across somebody and you see, okay, they may play really good in front of a jury, or their story kind of has weight to this independent person who's there. So I really am a fan of mediation, and so is the ABA. So because we're having ABA Mediation Week, Yolanda, can you tell us about kind of what ABA Mediation Week is? I know it's more geared for the general public, but just so that attorneys are aware, tell us about ABA Mediation Week, and Kevin, you can kind of piggyback off of her.
Mediation Week for the ABA and for the South Carolina Bar is October 18th through the 24th is next week. And we're just trying to educate the public about the benefits of mediation, trying to make it not so much a frightening thing for folks to consider, not only in civil cases, which is mostly what I do, but Kevin does the family court work too. It's a, you know, it's a time-saving method. Like I said, in the last couple of years, not being able to get cases tried, hopefully it gets a resolution to the case. It relieves the anxiety of having to be in a courtroom where you're not in control of what happens. What I tell litigants and lawyers when we're doing mediations is the people who know the very most about the case are the ones who get to make the decision if we can settle the case today. And so we're just trying to get the word out to anybody who's involved in a lawsuit or who has a controversy that could end up in a lawsuit, that there's alternative ways of resolving matters other than going through the time, expense, and weight that's involved in getting cases to trial these days.
And one thing we need to remind lawyers about, I do a lot of speaking at CLEs on ethics and that kind of stuff, but what lawyers forget, we have an ethical obligation to explain to clients alternative methods for resolving your disputes. And the truth of the matter is, the longer I've practiced, the more I realize people don't want their day in court. They want their thing resolved. And particularly in family court, when you've got everybody around the table, you know, they can vent, say what all they want and all that. But once you get down to it and say, we're talking about your children, we're talking about your lives, we're talking about this, either we can sit around here and figure out where your family's going forward, or we can turn it over to a judge who's going to listen to about a half a day or a day and then going to make a decision you guys have to live with. And people understand that really this is a much better way of resolving your dispute and ending your litigation. And lawyers need to remember to explain that to clients and push that.
And it's cheaper. I think that, you know, that's maybe something that doesn't get enough, play, but it's a lot cheaper to pay a mediator and to pay your lawyer to have a day of mediation than prepping for trial, you know, going through jury selection, going through trial. If you can settle the case in mediation and it's required anyway, I don't see why you wouldn't give it the, you know, old college try.
Well, you do.
You also save money on expert witnesses and certain types of cases. There's an astronomical amount of money that's spent on expert witnesses.
Yeah, when you mediate things like medical malpractice, or you mediate construction litigation or things like that, or even probate litigation where you're getting into land and what things are appraised for, you just have a massive amount of experts that are going to be needed. If you try it, you can explain to the client, I know you don't want to pay them $50,000 on the other side, but you're either going to pay it to the other side today to settle it, or you're going to pay it to your experts and hope it works out at trial. I mean, that's something that the client really usually has not thought about. And it, you know, it makes a really good point that we can end it today or we can press on. And like Yolanda said, now we're saying you can press on, but it's going to be another year and a half or 2 years before you get your day in court. So, you know, keep that in mind.
The finality, it helps push finality, which is
absolutely it does. Absolutely. And that's what people want. You know, they really do. They think they want their day in court and they've watched it on TV 100 times. They don't want their day. They just want to be over and done with.
Well, probably only 10% of the cases that I've mediated does the party, the plaintiff in particular, want their day in court. What I find usually is that they're so nervous and that I can tell them sometime during the process of the mediation, there's a non-monetary benefit to settling this case today. And that is, you don't have to get up every morning and worry about some mean lawyer cross-examining you or going to court and having the judge decide what evidence goes in and what evidence doesn't go in. And that is, I think that's a really important value to mediation, is that non-monetary, being able to put an end to the case.
Oh, I mean, coming up short, they could get nothing. And this is a double context.
Exactly. One other advantage of, you know, of mediation is that you can be creative in how you settle the case. Give you a quick family court story, but the judges are going to give somebody visitation every other weekend, every other week in the summer, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. May not work for your family. So the two of you can sit down and craft an agreement that works for your family that a judge couldn't necessarily order if you tried your case. You know, I mediate a lot of employment cases. And when you get to the meat of the matter, the thing that is most important to the employee who's been fired or run off is not to be, you know, not to be blackballed going forward by the ex-employer. So we found that one of the most valuable things you can do in a mediation that a jury can't do for you is we can craft amongst us the reference that's going to be read to any employee, any potential employer that calls. I had one where there were some real issues with, people just didn't know how to behave and treat each other. And one of the things we put into the agreement, in addition to writing the reference, we also got the employer to commit to sensitivity training for their employees going forward. That's not anything a judge can do, and that's not anything a jury can do, but it accomplishes the purpose. That is one thing to remind people in mediation. We can be very creative in how we resolve it to the satisfaction of the parties that a jury or judge can't necessarily do for you.
So what would you say are the best attributes of a successful mediator? You know, somebody that's coming up and they want to be a mediator. I mean, we can get into what's required to become a mediator. What do you feel is the best attributes of a successful mediator?
Ooh, what do you think, Yolanda?
Patience.
Yeah.
Patience.
Patience.
Empathy.
Yeah. Temperament, like you said.
Temperament, yeah.
When people get upset, you know, be able to calm them down. There's a mediator here in Florence, Carl Falkins, who's been around for forever. He just has a calming demeanor and a calming voice. And when the parties get excited, they get bent out of shape and they want to yell and scream at each other. A really good mediator. And I can see Yolanda doing it, just saying, okay, I understand, settle down. But patience and temperament really do go a long way. A very long way toward getting cases settled.
There's a mediator in Colombia who, Sam McKeeba, who I've...
Sam's great.
Sam's great. But Sam has a trick up his sleeves. He bakes cookies. And it's so every time that, you know, you finish your little opening session,
and then you smell fresh baked cookies in the air. And it's just harder to be mad if you're smelling chocolate chip cookies. It's like, I think it's genius. It's the one thing it always throws opposing counsel and
it disarms everybody.
Yeah, because it's like, is that cookies? Yeah, sure enough. You can't be mad like chewing on a hot chocolate chip cookie. It's great.
Oh, that's a great idea. I usually just, if somebody's being unreasonable, cut off the heater air to them. till they want to get right, you know, just freeze them out.
Yeah,
you know, just freeze them out. But you really do. You know, mediators just—they need to be people, and they need to be experienced lawyers. For the, you know, generally speaking, because people want to know, what do you think? You've been around the block and back. What do you think might happen? Yolanda, because you've tried plenty of these cases, and you know, and to be able to explain that in a way that they understand but aren't intimidated or anything else, I think just goes a huge way toward, you know, toward putting people at ease, which is really what you need to do, get them set up, put them at ease.
So what's the path if somebody wants to, these young bucks out here that want to be mediators, whenever y'all decide to hang up the law profession, what is the best path, you would say, that somebody would need to take to be, I mean, are they looking for a very diverse practice, which is, you know, the general practice is really going away in modern law. You know, everybody's niching down. What do you think's the best way to be prepared for somebody that's looking to do this as their main practice area?
Having experience in the court system helps a lot, because then you know what's going to, not just by hearsay, but you know what's going to happen in Darlington County or Pickens County on a certain type of case. And I guess in family court, obviously, is if you need to have tried those cases and kind of know what, you know, how they're going to come down. I don't think you have to be certified yet with the rules. There was some talk about that at one time, but there's a certification process in South Carolina that you have to go through a training session. When Kevin and I did it, I think it was a 40-hour session. Now we're trying to figure out how to make it in South Carolina, have a virtual training session. So you have to go through that too. I think that's a big part of it.
Having tried so many family court cases. But I tell you what I would do, to be honest with you. I mean, if you picked up the telephone, said, I want to learn how to mediate, or I want to be a lawyer in a mediation, Yolanda, can I follow you around? Can I watch you in two or three mediations? And you get to see it all then. You get to see how the sausage is made, because you're watching the mediator go back and forth and watching the mediator, you know, talk to the parties and get them in line. And I love having people call and saying, hey, Kevin, can I come sit and watch? I'll come hang out with you for two or three days. And they realize it's more about being a really nice person with experience. It's more about that than it is rocket science, because it's not rocket science.
So that leads me to my question. I know that there, you know, with COVID and things going virtual, you know, Kevin, you talked about one of the essential skills being a people person. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're virtual, that kind of lose something there. I was curious on how you two have dealt with virtual mediation, and if there's some tips that you may have for our listeners in doing these virtual mediations that may be of some benefit to them.
I think it's still is important, even in the virtual mediations, to try to get to know some information about all the participants, not just the lawyers, but the parties too. And if it's an insurance adjuster, find out where that adjuster is and find out, you know, what their interests are. And that is the patience part of it. You know, they will need to have patience with you getting to know them and not just dealing with the facts and the evidence and the law that the case is about, but kind of getting to know the participants.
That's the hardest thing for a mediator to learn, is that you will make more progress in a mediation talking about things other than the case itself than you will talking about the facts. Because truly, after the first two or three times back and forth, the cards are all on the table. I mean, people know what their thinking is. So what you do is, like Yolanda said, talk to both sides, find out where they live, what kinds of things they like to do, you know, and you can work in how this case has affected you and how finishing it and resolving it and ending it will help you. And I just think it hasn't compromised the people person part of the process at all. In my mind, I really don't think. I think people listen closer when they're watching on TV than if we're sitting in a room and their mind can wander. I really do. They zone in on the TV, you know, on the video end of it. That's how people are now.
So how do you get somebody, if you're in that situation and you got a hothead on one side and or bullheaded person that's 100% sold in one course of direction, how do you talk them off the ledge and somewhere back to reasonableness?
I imagine Yolanda's a hell of a lot better about that than I am. I just want to smack them around a little bit.
I think your strong point's candor. You just go tell them exactly like it is.
I think you do. Yeah, one of the properties I said that a mediator should have or personality benefits is being empathetic. Yep. And being able to say, you know, I understand that you're upset about this. Let's talk about it. Let them talk about it. It's their day in court. And so if they want to blow off some steam, you got to let that happen a little bit. And you try to keep it, that person away from the folks who are on the other side when they're blowing off the steam or saying all the things that they're so upset and angry about. And I think if you let them do that at some point, then they come back around to what is this case really about? Are we going to be able to settle it? And you can get to a point when you're telling them, we're not going to settle this if you maintain this demeanor throughout the process.
Right. You're right. I mean, what they want to do is they want to say their piece, not necessarily to the other side, but they want somebody to listen to what they have to say. And a good mediator, like Yolanda said, let them blow it off. Let them rant and rave for 10 or 15 minutes and talk about how horrendous it is. And, you know, and when you do empathize with them, and then you break it down and talk about the ways you can make all of those problems a little better by resolving it. I don't have any problem with litigants blowing off steam, saying their piece, venting or whatever it is, because if you do it in opening when everybody's together, you'll never settle and it'll make everything worse. But let them holler at me as the mediator. I'm okay with that.
So Yolanda and Kevin, I don't think you know this. So I teach a civil litigation capstone course at the law school, and it's basically the nuts and bolts of civil lit. And it ends with mediation. So we have our students do, you know, the opening, and they have this mock case and they have to go back and forth. So I'm curious, because I may make my students listen to this episode when we have class in the spring semester. What's more important to you as a mediator? Is it the statement and conversations that you have with the parties before the mediation? You know, the statement that they may email you and, you know, you may have conversations with them? Or is it the actual opening and the presentation at the mediation?
It helps me prepare so much better if I get good information prior to the mediation. And I think sometimes the opening is not, they're either going to hold back because they don't want to offend the other side.
Right.
Or they're going to spout off, you know, information that's probably not going to be helpful sometimes. So I'd say the preparation ahead of time, either the written information I get from the other side or just the conversations I'm able to have with the lawyers.
Yeah, even a phone call makes a difference. But what it does give the mediator the opportunity to understand prior to litigation is the lawyers are honest and they'll say, hey, Kevin, I got a problem client. my client thinks it's worth $1 million and it's just not. And you're going to have to spend a little extra time with my client, talking to them and all of that. And that sort of helps me set the tone for the entire day. If all I hear is what they say in opening, I will never get that picture of the dynamics of the case, which I think for the mediator is incredibly important.
And what we've told our students, it does not benefit your case to posture and lie to the mediator. If you can be honest, and Kevin, like you said, and say, look, my client's kind of a jerk. He thinks it's this. We've been going back and forth. You know, it doesn't make any sense to get in there and pretend like you have the greatest case in the world when you know you have flaws. And I've been more successful in mediations when I've said to the mediator, look, I'm going to be honest with you. Here's where I think our case is great, and here's our weaknesses. And so I think that we could win on these, we could lose on these. Here's what I think about my client, but frankly, here's what I think about opposing counsel. And giving you guys more information ultimately helps me do my job better and helps me, you know, advocate for my client.
The other important thing that we would tell lawyers, I think you asked this a couple of questions back, but it's to really prepare your client for the mediation. Spend a little bit of time before, maybe even before the day of the mediation, mm-hmm. talking to your client, telling them the good, bad, and the ugly about the case and what to expect is going to happen at the mediation, what the other side's going to say, so they're not completely offended when they hear the arguments that the other side puts forth. Just get your client prepared ahead of time. That's another important piece of it.
Yeah, that is really an important piece, because you can tell the ones that are deer in the headlights and they've gotten there and they've never heard, you know, they don't know what they're doing and why they're there and that sort of stuff. And one thing that I found, I know Yolanda has, because she's done so many more civil ones than I have, but if you want to posture all day long and you want to posture with the mediator and all that and beat your chest and all of that, you will never get your best dollar out of the other side. I mean, doing that, I mean, I had one today. And the plaintiff wouldn't come out of the ozone, which meant the defendant sitting there telling me, Kevin, we've got good money to pay on this case, but I'm not going to do that if he's in the ozone. And explaining to lawyers that if you really want to maximize the potential for settling it, don't posture with me. I'm not the jury. You know, right. The adjuster, they do it every single day. Just get serious about negotiating the thing and you'll find their best dollar. If you don't, you know, you're going to leave a lot of money on the table and it's just not going to serve your client well at all. Be honest.
And you've wasted your time.
And you've wasted your time. You've wasted the mediator's time and everything else. And, you know, it's just a process where you want to come in it open-minded, you want to come in it and be honest and do like Joseph said. Every single opening I do, I tell them my strengths, I tell them my weaknesses. And so it kind of takes the steam out of their opening, because I say, look, I know I've got problems with all this. And we'll, you know, here's how we're going to deal with it. And that gets it started.
Now, to be clear, none of my cases have ever had weaknesses. I just hear that that's a
it's
thing.
Hypothetically. Yeah.
Hypothetically, I've heard this with other cases.
Yes, I'm sure. A lawyer told me one time, she said, you know, when I had a slam dunk, couldn't lose it. And she told me, she said, Kevin, all I've got to say is no matter how many times you flip a pancake, it's still got two sides. Sorry. Then she promptly took me to the woodshed and cut my fanny at trial. Yeah. So there is no case that is a slam dunk. And, you know, no case that can't be won or lost.
That's true, because when it gets to the jury, everything's 50-50. Well, absolutely. Guys, we end all of our episodes with war stories. And so this is something that can be funny, poignant, something from your practice career, your mediation career. We tend to, it can go all over the place. And if you've listened to this podcast, our listeners know that it's gone from silly to serious, from tear jerking to terrible. So I'll start with Yolanda. Yolanda, do you have a war story that you'd want to share with us?
I do, but I'm sure Kevin's are so much more interesting. He's a great storyteller, by the way. One that I thought about that, you know, is not, won't get me in trouble because, you know, all mediations are confidential. You just got to be careful about what you talk about. In the early days of Zoom mediations, I guess it was either probably late March of last year when lawyers and insurance adjusters and plaintiffs were coming to the Zoom table, so to speak. We started this mediation. There were probably about six or seven people there. And one of the participants had one of those cool backgrounds, you know, so you couldn't see what was behind them. It was like a company logo or something. And so I'm doing my opening, explaining mediation, and I'm getting ready to get the plaintiff's lawyer to tell about their case. And all of a sudden, this guy in boxer shorts, like an apparition, walks through the background.
Yes.
We were all so thrown off by that. And I think finally, having seen all the participants on the screen kind of look like, what? The woman who was on that screen, was you could tell she was trying to figure out how to turn the video off. And she turns around and says something to the guy in the boxer shorts, and she quickly gets rid of the screen, and we go on with the mediation. That's about the best I can do, though.
That's pretty good.
I have not had one like that. I'll just tell you a short one. Everybody knows George and Peter Hearn. Mm-hmm. I was getting one at their office a few weeks ago, and I thought I had seen everything. But I come back in to talk to the defense lawyer and walk in, and he's back in the corner, way back in the corner, like somebody was threatening him. And I said, well, what are you doing? And he goes, there's a snake in here. And I go, what? He goes, yeah, there's a snake fell out of the curtain, and he's right there in the corner. And it was, and it scared me. Oh, so I go find George and Pete, and I go, hey, look, man, this is above and beyond the hourly rate here. So Pete comes in. He's going to grab it with a cup. He said, well, I'll put it in these two coffee cups. And he puts one there, and the snake tries to bite him, and then all of a sudden he ends up getting a broom and playing broom hockey out of the office. No matter what happened the rest of the day, me and the defense lawyer continued to look at the curtains and go, that one wasn't a big, I wonder where his mom is or his
dad. That's right. Is.
So that we ended up getting it settled, but in spite of the fact that we had a snake drop in on us, which was,
I really just think it was a very clever move.
Hey, I was thinking the same thing.
Thinking outside the box. All right, we're going to have this snake drop out of the ceiling, throw them off their game.
Well, it definitely threw the defense lawyer off and scared the crap out of me. So, you know,
it's really genius when you think about it.
Plaintiff's lawyers out there.
Yeah. These,
you know, I may get one of those rubber snakes to drop out of the curtains, you know, or something like that.
I predict that there's going to be an epidemic of things, bugs, frogs, animals, snakes, who, you know, ghosts, whatever is going to come out just so that they can mess with that mediation. This is genius. We're breaking ground here.
Well, it works because they got it settled and I was horrified. So that was the most fun we had.
Well, Yolanda and Kevin, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Now, of course, as we noted in our intro, they're both mediators. You can contact either of them. You can contact Yolanda and Kevin. Yolanda doesn't really use her website at currymediation.com, but look her up, email her. You can find her and she'll mediate your case with the empathy that she says here. And if you use Kevin, just watch the ceilings because apparently there's
or shoot me an email. That's
right. So obviously our co-host Amber couldn't make it here today, so we send her our best. But Dane and I will look forward to having you guys listen to all of our previous episodes. You can go to our website at SouthCarolinaLawPod.com. You can go to our social media
at SC Law Pod. And you can follow us all on Twitter. You can find Dane at SC Crim Lawyer. You can follow Amber at Red Judicata, which frankly is the best Twitter name of all of us. And then you can follow me at Joseph P. Bias, all on Twitter. Guys,
write this down, Joseph. Yolanda and I will be here on your 200th show.
I am so thrilled to hear you say that. And because you say that, you will get invited to our 200th show. This is, look, y'all say that, but in like 2 years, you're going to get a random email. Like, remember back in October
where you promised
us?
We will be here to help you celebrate your 200th show.
Fantastic. Hopefully it won't be virtual. We had to do 100 virtual. 200 we're going to do in person, and there's going to be wine and beer, and it's going to be great.
So, we'll definitely appreciate be there.
That. Thank you, Kevin.
We're going to be hanging out in your movie room, your new room. Y'all should see Joseph. Leather recliner chairs. This dude.
Hey, we can do it there. Yeah.
Look, don't go spread. I got 30 years to pay this off, so I feel like it's the bank's movie room. But yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. Go give us 5 stars on Apple and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. Send us an email or directexaminationpodcast@gmail.com if you have any suggestions for shows. And we will see you next time on the Direct Examination Podcast.
Like, share, and subscribe. Thanks, everybody.
Exactly. Thank you, everybody. Good night, y'all.